Kia ora, this program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Wellington Access Radio, make your voice heard.
Good day everybody, and welcome to Capital Irish, the Irish-related program that comes to you every Sunday at high noon on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. Or you can listen to it in any part of the world by googling wellingtonaccessradio.org.nz and download any of our podcasts. We cover different age groups and different Irish interests. My name is Jim Frail, originally from County Mayo. With me in the studio doing the technicals is Marion Grealis and a new man, Ray Ferguson from County Cavan, who will be filling in and helping us out while hopefully he'll remain, of course, but he'll be helping us definitely while Marion is away, and she's away on Monday for a trip back to Ireland. So we wish her the very, very best and hope she has a marvellous time and that the weather remains good. It's very good at the moment over there. We are also supported by our sponsors, Peter and Susie McGuinness, the Wellington Irish Trust and the Hutt Valley Irish Society. This year, 2022, is the centenary of one of the saddest and worst events in Ireland's history, the Irish Civil War, which officially started on the 28th of June, 1922, with the shelling of the Four Courts in Dublin, and finished 11 months later, the 24th of May, 1923. At least twice as many were killed in that 11 months than were killed in the War of Independence, which lasted nearly 4 years. There is a national war conference taking place at present at University College Cork. It's going to be on for the next few months. 130 expert speakers are examining all aspects of the Irish Civil War. A few weeks ago, the Irish Taoiseach, Micheál Martin, gave an address there. He said that the Civil War could have been avoided if the British government had accepted the draft constitution submitted by Michael Collins for its consideration during the occupation of the Four Courts, because they occupy that, as you know a bit of the history, for at least 2, maybe 3 months before they were actually driven out. Anyway, Lord George, the British Prime Minister, rejected it outright. Why? Because it did not contain the oath of allegiance to the British Crown. The fact that Irish-born General Henry Wilson had just been assassinated in England by two World War I veterans, English-born soldiers, but of course with Irish heritage, did not help the situation. He says, that's Micheál Martin says, the rigid inflexibility of the British government on that issue was one of the main causes for the Civil War. Martin also blamed the harsh dictatorial powers of the new Irish government. They executed many Republicans without a trial after Collins was shot in August 1922. In all together, 77 were executed. And amongst them, some of the great ones, the well-known better ones, were Lee Mellows and Rory O'Connor, Dick Barrett. And a lot of those, or most of those that were executed the year before, they fought shoulder to shoulder with Michael Collins and some of the men that were now executing them. Isn't it amazing? And anyway, it's good that after all this time, 100 years, it is now all aspects of this civil war, which has been a very embarrassing period for most of governments since, are now being discussed and analysed by historians and experts. Just to back up on that, a recent report in The Guardian said that Ireland is now the third most peaceful country in the world. Well, hopefully that will continue. And after that, it's time for a song. And let's have A Nation Once Again by the Wolf Tones, written by Thomas Davis in the 1840s, 1844, I think. And he was a founding member of the Young Irelanders movement of the time. Guardian recently had a good film review of an Irish language movie that has broken box office records in Ireland and Britain. The name of the movie is On Colleen Cooan, The Quiet Girl. It's directed by a new first-time director by the name of Colm Bearhead and based on a novella or a short story by County Wicklow writer Claire Keegan, called Foster. It is about a 10-year-old girl who is sent from a big family, who is sent to live with foster parents on a farm in County Waterford for a summer in the 1980s. This movie has won multiple awards and rave reviews from the critics. The Guardian called it a jewel. It said it's appealing across generations. People who have not been to the cinema in years have come out to see it. It has surpassed the previous Irish language film, Aracht, a great hunger era drama. Sounds a good movie. I just hope it finds its way to New Zealand one day. The Guardian also had a recent story of two interesting women, Elizabeth and Lily Yeats, sisters of the great poet and writer William Butler Yeats and his famous brother, the painter Jack Yeats. Now, all their lives, these sisters lived in the shadow of their famous brothers. Now, an academic project has shone a light on the two sisters' unrecognized role in Irish history. After Ireland won her independence in December 1921, the sisters established the Coola Press, which helped bolster the national confidence of the nation with vibrant images of a prosperous Dublin thriving on Irish images of Irish rural traditions. And this was a rebuttal to racist anti-Irish images of a feckless hooligan type of Irish behaviour, which we've all seen in the English press and different presses over the years, still alive and well in parts of the world. Trinity College art historian Angela Griffith says that the Yeats's sisters' influence was incredible. The material they produced was being sold in Ireland and Britain and America. They employed only women, producing handcrafted books, cards and prints that won glowing reviews at exhibitions in Paris, London, Chicago, and many other cities. This was echoed in films such as The Quiet Man, a 1952 Irish classic with Moyn O'Hara and John Wayne. They were a powerful example, that's the sisters, in the new Irish state of Irish women, self-reliance, Irish women's self-reliance, running their own business. It was, got to remember, this was a male-dominated world at that time, where women were expected to stay in the shadow of the menfolk. To add salt to the wound, the great Irish writer, James Joyce, was very dismissive of the sisters. In his famous book, Ulysses, he made a scornful reference to them as the weird Dublin sisters. Anyway, speaking of James Joyce, how many listeners know that he had a sister living here in New Zealand who wrote to him regularly and he to her? She was 2 years younger than the famous James, and he returned from Italy to see her off from Dublin to New Zealand. She was a Mercy nun and known as Sister Mary Gertrude. She died in Christchurch in 1964 at the age of 80. She taught the piano and the violin and other subjects for the Convent of Mercy Sisters, mostly in Greymouth, but other places as well in the South Island, and also in Christchurch, where she is died and is buried. Apparently, according to what I've read about it, whether it's true or not, I'm not sure, but it says that she was not interested in reading any of her brother's books. Monday last was American Day of Independence, 4th of July. On that day, the Irish Central published a few facts about the Irish legacy connected to that country. Christopher Columbus is credited to be the first European ship captain and discoverer the country back in 1492. Did you know that there were several Irishmen in his crew? The one who is best known is Patrick Maguire, and he was the very first European and one of Columbus's crew to set foot on North American ground, according to the newspaper. The first American general to die in their War of Independence was Irish-born Dubliner Richard Montgomery. The American Navy have several ships called after Montgomery. More than 20 United States presidents claim Irish roots. The most Irish were Andrew Jackson, this and James Buchanan, because both of those presidents' parents, both of their parents, were born in Ireland. A total of 56 men signed the Declaration of Independence in America. 8 of those were foreign-born, but 3 of those 8 were born in Ireland. Irish-born James Holborn designed the White House. Dozens of Irish-born men laboured, laying bricks and plastering the famous White House building. The music of the American National Anthem, the Star-Spangled Banner, is based on music composed by the great Irish blind harper, County Meath-born Turlough O'Carolan. A Wexford man, John Barry, is known as the father of the American Navy. He and his crew fought and won the final naval battle of the American Revolution off the coast of Cape Canaveral, 10th of March, 1783. Of course, there are many, many more, but we can't mention them all. After that, it's time for a song, The Fields of Athenry by Paddy Riley.
Prison wall, I heard a young girl calling. Michael, they have taken you away, for you stole Trevelyan's corn, so the young might see the morn. Now a prison ship lies waiting in the bay. Low lie the fields of Athenry, where once we watched the small free birds fly. Our love was on the wing, we had dreams and songs to sing. Round the fields of Athenry, by a lonely prison wall, I heard a young man calling. Nothing matters, Mary, when you're free. Against the famine and the crown, I rebel, they cut me down. Now you must raise our child with dignity. Low lie the fields of Athenry, where once we watched the small free birds. Our love was on the wing, we had dreams and songs to sing. It's so lonely round the fields of Athenry. Falling as the prison ship sailed out against the sky, for she lived. lonely round the fields of Athenry.
The Guardian had a story last week headlined Ireland's Forgotten Gaelic Olympics, which were called the Tailteann Games, which rivaled the 1924 Paris Games. It was the biggest sporting event in 1924, would you believe? Even bigger than the Paris Olympics of that year. It was held in Dublin 2 years after the new state was established. It was named after an ancient version of the Games last held in Ireland 7 centuries earlier and was designed to celebrate Irish culture and sporting prowess, but with a modern global twist. Elite foreign athletes were invited, including Johnny Westmuller, the United States Olympic swimmer at the time and future star of the Tarzan movies. Male-dominated the games were, like all things at that time, but there was athletes invited from Britain, United States, Canada, Australia and South Africa. More than 1,000 medals were awarded. The last event of that, there was 3 games. The last one was held in 1932. There was also one held in 1928. And then they must have fizzled out. Now, I never knew about these events, as I suspect many of our listeners would not have, until I read it in The Guardian last week. Be a good question for The Chase, wouldn't it? The same paper had another story the week before with the headline, Why Are Gaelic Games So Popular in Asia? And it went on to say that Gaelic football, hurling, camogie, handball and rounders are surging in popularity all across Asia. The GAA reports that there are 22 Gaelic sports clubs in Asia. They say that the women's Gaelic games are currently seeing the biggest growth in Asia. The games provide an opportunity, especially for young women, to escape potential cultural confines and no pressure to begin at a good level, a contributing factor, it says, to their popularity. Now, the great majority of players are non-Irish, says the GAA spokesperson. The Asian Gaelic Games have been running since 1996, and the South Asian Gaelic Games were established in 2008. There are now more than 72 teams, it says. The Irish government, under its diaspora strategy and immigrant support program, provide millions in funding each year to Irish organisations, including the GAA, to strengthen the Irish international community. The GAA has more than 400 clubs outside Ireland. Other slippers of news. Time magazine has named a County Mayo woman as one of its most influential people for 2022. No, Marion, it's not you. Can you guess who she is? A clue. She is young and a famous writer. That's right. Sally Rooney is the name. In case you're not up with her latest bestseller, it's called Beautiful World, Where Are You? Time magazine says of Sally, she won't just be the hottest young novelist of the year. She will be a permanent fixture. Amazing achievement, I think, for the 31-year-old Castlebar woman. Joe Biden is also one of the 100 on the list of the most influential people. Well, you would expect that. But Joe's ancestors, of course, well, on one side, also come from County Mayo, Ballinair. Most Irish people and The Guardian have been reporting on the groundbreaking project that have brought back 7 centuries of Irish public records that were thought to have been lost forever after they were destroyed during the shelling of the 4 courts in Dublin at the beginning of the Irish Civil War, which I spoke about before, in June 1922. But because of the wonders of modern technology, visitors will now be able to step inside a six-story public record office via an immense 3D experience. This virtual record allows the viewer to view what was thought to be lost forever. It turns out that Irish and English historians have been able to locate duplicate copies of Ireland's past that were stored away in England and national archives, and even in Ireland, especially Trinity College Dublin, the basement of there. And they were hidden for the past 100 years. Anyway, it is a wonderful find, whatever the reason of them being hidden, that should now attract thousands of extra tourists to Dublin to view this lost treasure. And after all that, we will finish up with a song. And this song is Isle of Hope, Isle of Tears. And it was sung by Dolores and Sean Keane. It's about a young 17-year-old girl from Cove, Annie Moore, who was the very first immigrant who came through the new immigration station in Ellis Island, New York, on the 1st of January, 1892, with her two younger brothers. She was the first of 3.5 million Irish immigrants, of course, there was millions of others from all over Europe, who came through there in its 62 years history. Some of my own relatives would have come through there way back, and even my wife's mother came through, would you believe, there. So quite emotional a few years back. We were there and she wanted to visit it, and it is a very emotional place if you've had any relatives that ever came through there. But anyway, going back to Annie Moore, there's a statue to Annie there in Ellis Island, and there's also one to her in Cove. Anyway, she had a tough life. She died in 1924, age 50. And by that time, she had been a mother to 11 children. Six predeceased her. Fare thee well. Until next time.
On the first day of January 1892, they opened Ellis Island.
You've been listening to Capital Irish on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM, thanks to the generosity of our sponsors. We couldn't be here without them. Our sponsors are Wellington Irish Trust, Susie and Peter McGuinness, and the Hutt Valley Irish Society. A very big thank you from all of us on the Capital Irish team.
That program was brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
Thanks New Zealand On Air for funding accessmedia.nz.